Jerry Cannon, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure, Dave.
You ran in 2014 against Congressman Benishek, and you lost. Why do you think that you have a winning message this time around?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One, we're trying to build on the success that we achieved in 2014. We garnered 113,000 votes. We won the fight for independent voters. Our profile resonates with them. So in 16, we're going to take that as a starting point and build on that. I think second to that is really there's a lot of disenchantment with the establishment and, you know, people who are career politicians. And that's not me. I'm a career public servant. And I've held elective office, but really at the local level as a sheriff. And so I think a lot of people are just, you know, I'm not an insider. I'm not connected. I'm not big money. You know, I'm just a pragmatic local elected official who has found a way to get things done. And my experience is from the local level all the way up to the international level. And so I could hit the ground running, especially in areas of criminal justice and defense. And so I think we've got an obligation to let people hear about the things that we have to offer and make a conscious choice about, you know, which direction they want to go.
The presidential campaign, I think, has revealed that people have a deep dissatisfaction with how things are going, and you know, with the political process. And you've told me before that you think that some of the success that Bernie Sanders has and even Donald Trump can be tied to this feeling of people being sick of how Washington works. What kind of congressman would you be?
Well, I would be a congressman that would put the needs of this district, and more importantly, the people of this district, first and foremost. You know, what really dismays me is, and without mentioning names, is this ends up being all about money. It's constantly, even when I was in 2014, I went to Washington a number of times, and the message was money, money. You have to raise money, money, money. It's like, you know, I get 50 messages a day about solicitations for money. And I think, you know, the money has a toxic effect on our entire political process. For me, when you go to Washington, you need to be there for the people that you want to try to make the lives better, the people who sent you there. And if you do that and they don't keep you, that's okay. I think I could go home and be absolutely comfortable. I did the right thing. When you go there and start thinking about how can I stay here, I think you've already lost your way.
Well, let's talk about money a little bit. Your Democratic opponent, Lon Johnson, has raised a lot of money. You haven't so far. Now, the critique about money you can make, but you have to acknowledge that money does play a part, and it can be difficult to win if you don't raise a lot of money. How can you compete in an era when money is important toward winning?
Well, money is not the most important thing. And I'm not anti-establishment, and I'm certainly not anti-money. I know that you got to have money to run a campaign, and we will have more than enough money to run our campaign. This is really about talk versus action. And so when people talk about, I've lived this. I did this the last cycle, and I deferred to the judgment of people that were experts on how to do this at this level. It didn't work out. As a matter of fact, it hasn't worked out the last three cycles.
And which part didn't work out? What do you mean?
If you raise, matter of fact, I fundraised Congressman Benishek two cycles in the last race.
But yeah. Overall, though, he outraised you.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying that. But if you raise, it costs money to raise money. And so what you really want to have is the right candidate with the right message and a record of public service and a record of accomplishments. I think that's what people want. That's why people are so dissatisfied. This has all become about money. And that's the worst possible measure of success. It is a metric. In some people's view, it shows the viability of the campaign. It's just money. That is not what people are going to elect. So you can't buy an election. And there's a point of diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. So I think what you really got to do is you got to be out and about with people, talking to people. I didn't do this the last time. I listened to all these experts about it's all about money. We're going to win this on television. And it didn't work.
a lot of people in northern Michigan are struggling. You know, there's not a cheery, optimistic feeling, you know, in large parts of the country and in this district. What do you offer those people?
Well, you know, my platform, so to speak, is it's like a three-legged stool, and there and these things are really kind of intertwined. But obviously, the economy and jobs is crucial. It solves a lot of problems. You know, poverty is a major problem, not only in this district but across the country. But poverty also drives problems in schools, in education. So the three important things for me are, you know, what do we do about the economy and the jobs? What do we do about public education? What do we do about the environment? Working with if we want to talk about economy and jobs, you know, we need to, you know, what's the simplest thing that we could do? We could let's start working on infrastructure. We would create tens of thousands of good paying jobs. We need sustainable year-round jobs with a living wage. And, you know, not everybody's meant to go to college. So we're talking about trades. And there was an article in the Record Eagle not very long ago. I think it was over the holidays. And it was below the fold. But it's like, I do not want to get trapped. A young person, it was a quote, I don't want to get trapped in northern Michigan. You know, I understand some young people want to leave. That'll always be. But some people, you know, want to stay, but they're you can't make a living here. And so ways to do that would include, you know, we got to partner with, you know, small businesses. That's the economic engine of northern Michigan. What's holding you back? What do we got to do? What can we do with the tax code? What can we do? Is infrastructure in the way? Do we need to have, you know, if you made this little pencil right here, Dave, and then you were doing it at home and you just wanted to sell it to Interlock, and well, you know, you'd probably it'd be a nice little hobby. But if you could get on broadband and the world become your marketplace, you know, and you, so we got to make sure that we've got those kinds of technologies so people can reach out. We got three great state universities and our community colleges who could be incubators of innovation. So when we talk about public education, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, arts and science, that's where we get innovation. And those young people, we want them to stay here and turn those innovative ideas into, it will all turn into jobs. Not all small businesses make it, but many of them do.
Let's talk about the environment for a sec. I want to talk about the oil pipeline that goes under the Straits of Mackinac, Line 5. The state of Michigan is investigating that pipe, and a number of environmental groups are worried that this thing's going to fail and leak oil. Enbridge, the company that runs it, has said, you know, it's perfectly fine. What should be done with it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Enbridge, you know, there are about 1,000 in about the last 10 or 15 years, there's been about 1,000 spills. The worst that we know of is down in Kalamazoo. That was an Enbridge pipeline. And so I think the biggest concern is, you know, Enbridge, probably a great company, but the lack of transparency, not sharing, I mean, not letting someone independently look at this. I mean, it's just, it causes, there's just a lack of trust.
So what would you push for?
Well, what I would say, and what I understand is there early on, you know, this was critical. This in the 50s, this was critical to move these products to the marketplace. And along the way, we benefited from that. Over time, things have evolved. A lot of natural gas goes through there for heating homes and what have you. But over time, you know, that was the quickest and the shortest route. But over time, there's been all kinds of other alternate pipelines built. And the capacity to move those products to where they need to go could be easily rerouted. And so if something was to happen, God forbid, but if something was to happen to that pipeline, I can guarantee you those products would still get to the marketplace.
Should they shut it down right now?
Well, and so a lot of discussion like, let's have it inspected and let's have it independently inspected and see what it says. There's been a lot of people who already come up with some hypotheticals about how that would go. I think the state has a responsibility to protect the environment. And, you know, if there are alternate ways to do this, then let's just use the alternate ways. We could not put that pipeline in today if we wanted to. And so why take the risk of what happened in Kalamazoo and have it happen here? And we're, you know what, we're pretty darn good at dealing with a crisis. But, you know, why not avoid the crisis? You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so I'm saying, let's find another way to get that product to the marketplace. The capacity is already there. And we don't need this thing. We don't need the risk that goes along with this pipeline.
Should we shut it down in the interim until we find?
Well, I'm sure that there's going to be all kinds of safeguards built in place, like due diligence and due process. You got to go, do all of that. I think in the final analysis, everybody's going to say it's not worth the risk. Whatever the benefits are today, it's not worth the price that we might pay in the future. And if anything was to happen to that pipeline, you can talk about just about the environment. It's the economy of northern Michigan. I mean, Michigan, pure Michigan, Michigan and water. I mean, it's just like our image would take one heck of a beating. And who would want to come up to some of the things that we saw when there was the leak down in the Gulf? You know, with the shoreline covered with oil and what have you. And I hear all of this, we got safeguards and this thing would shut down. I know, but that was supposed to happen in Kalamazoo and it didn't. And so I think Enbridge has got a big challenge to try to convince people to trust them that they're going to do the right things at the right time. And I think that's where all the concern is. Yeah, it's been down there 60 years. Things have changed down there. There's actually a current down there. There's like an old river there. There's all kinds of things. And some of the, when it was first put in, it was just laying on the bottom. And then later on, things washed away. Things are changing all the time.
Should the federal government try to shut it down, while they inspect it, do an independent
inspection? Well, I think both of our senators have introduced some legislation to address what needs to be done. And, I'm certainly not anti-business or anything like that, but it's like, in the beginning, the logic was it's the quickest, shortest route to get this to the marketplace. In the meantime, in the intervening 60 years, all kinds of other pipelines have been built, especially the one that has taken that product to the refinery in Detroit, down where I used to live, the dirtiest zip code in America. And they're looking to increase the amount of emissions that they can release into the air. It's like, this is big business. And, the environment is absolutely critical to the people who live in and around those areas. And so the environment for us is the Straits, northern Michigan. We can't afford to have something go wrong with that. And so all those safeguards, all that due diligence, all that due process, all right, do what you got to do. But at the end of the day, I think everybody's going to say, you know what, if we can get this product to where it needs to go, why are we going to continue to do this? Why would we take the chance with a 60-year-old pipeline? But nothing's happened yet, but it could. And nothing happened before the disaster down in Kalamazoo until it happened. And then, you really can't even clean this up completely. You just kind of like, it's as good as it's going to be, and you just kind of let it go. That's like we need to avoid these kind of things from happening.
Okay. When you look at this district, I mean, I think it's the second largest district east of the Mississippi.
Yes.
You would be representing people in Traverse City. You'd be representing people in Ironwood. What makes you ready to represent a diverse district like this one?
Well, I've been in this district for 40 years. I've been a public servant for 50 years. I think I have a pretty good sense of, one of the things I was kidded about, you're not from the UP, how are you going to represent the UP? Well, I think we have so much more in common than we have not in common. And probably the biggest thing, while some would say it separates us, is really unites us is the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan. But I've been here. I understand. I've lived, worked, raised a family here. I know how hard it is to scratch out an existence and make a living and provide for your family, and I can relate with people. I've done that, and more importantly, I will be here after this election. I'm a public servant. This is what I've done. I've learned how to work with people of diverse interests and find the common ground to advance the issue. And it's not always. And I understand that you're not always going to get your way. I get it. And the way that we're going to win this race is really about finding the solutions that are in the middle. You can stake out these extremes, and maybe some of our candidates are going to do that. The solutions are in the middle, and that's where I've had great success over my 50-year career as a public servant, over my 40 years of living in this district, is finding the common ground in the middle. Not everybody's going to be happy, but you're doing the greater good for the most people. And it's all about how do you improve the lives of the people who are living here. And that's what the job's all about. This isn't about, you know, I'm at this point in my life where it's really an opportunity to continue to serve, to do the things that I've always done. And I'm much more comfortable with average, regular, working folks than I am probably working with, you know, people at the other end of the spectrum. And so, you know, that's my priority is taking care of people. I did that as a sheriff, taking care of the people in my community in Kalkaska County. I did that as a military officer all the way up through general, taking care of my troops, making sure that people had what they needed to be successful. In this case, it's about just creating opportunities and anticipating, you know, what could go wrong? What went wrong? Oh, in the UP, you know, electricity is going to go up, you know, 100%. Like, well, listen, we need to anticipate those kinds of things. You can't just wait till it happens. Someone flips a switch and then we're like, well, we're going to try to stop it. No, let's just prevent it from even happening. And so it's really about anticipating, looking down the road, listening to people, understanding what their concerns are. The best answers are here at the local level. They're not in Washington. They're not even in Lansing. It's at the local level. So you got to listen. And so as a public servant, you got to be willing to listen, number one. And the next best thing is health, safety, and welfare of the people have to be the number one priority. Take care of these people. Make sure that they've got propane in the winter, that they can afford the electricity, that there's economic opportunities for everybody, young and old. And making sure that, you know, our education system and our economy are strong and second to none, but they're not at the expense of our environment, you know. And so we need to build in that safeguard, and that we embrace innovation, and that we encourage opportunity for those that choose to stay here, that those that have left that want to come back, or those that just want to come join us. This is the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in the country. And so I've been here. I will be here. I've done this before. I know what it takes. I know how to solve problems. I know how to bring people together. It's not about who gets the credit. It's about how do you solve problems. And that's what I am, a problem solver.
Are you supporting anybody yet in the presidential primary?
It's such a – we watched a debate last night with a group up in Charlevoix. And you have to admit that the dream and the vision that Bernie Sanders has is something we probably all aspire to. Is it a bridge too far? Probably. Pragmatically, yeah, probably yes. But it's still, you know, that's our vision for the future. And so I love that message. But you can't deny that Hillary Clinton's knowledge and experience, you know, serve her well. Sometimes I have a question about her judgment on certain issues. So to answer your question, Dave, it's really I'm still, you know, the jury's still out, so to speak. You know, and for me, it's like a little bit of both. You know, how do we work this out? Obviously, you got to make a choice. And as time goes on, I mean, it was a great debate last night. I enjoyed that. But I'm still a little bit undecided. I'm not really to – and I've got people asking me to, you know, make a decision now. I'm thinking, I think I need to hear a little bit more. I'd like to know, like, how are we, how would we do that? And Bernie talked about that a little bit last night. But at the same time, Hillary says, you know, it's more process oriented where, you know, you got to make these incremental changes. I understand incremental changes, you know, to make these big, grand statements and, you know, like on the wing of a prayer and a hope and a promise that it's all going to happen. Now there's got to be a little bit of reality, like how we're going to accomplish that. Just look at the last 8 years. I mean, President Obama had some great visions at the same time, and we've had nothing but gridlock since. We certainly can't have another 8 years of this. This has served no good purpose. It has not served the country, and it certainly hasn't served the people that live in the country, especially in this district. We are almost an afterthought up here. and we need someone to be a champion for Northern Michigan. And like, well, what do you think you're going to do? Is you're just going to be one voice? Well, listen, this is about leadership. And so I think that there are other congressmen in other states from who represent rural areas that are frustrated just like I am about what's happened. And maybe we join together. We create a rural caucus. Like, you know, we're not always going to get our way, but, you know, when someone needs 100 votes, rural, we have some issues as well. Everybody, let's take care of the greatest numbers, and those are the folks that are in the cities. Well, what about us that are living in the rural areas? We've got a quality of life and a way of living that's worth preserving. And those of us that want to be or shouldn't be second fiddle to education, to health care, to anything. And we should have the best that we're able to afford. And so I think I'm going to say that the jury's out in Jerry's mind about, you know, who's, you know, where I'm going to throw my hat and my support. By the way, we had two great candidates, without a doubt.
Jerry Cannon, nice to have you here.
Dave, my pleasure, always.